Welcome to the Coventry and Warwickshire Green Business Programme podcast. Subscribe now for more episodes. Welcome to the 11th edition of the Green Business Programme podcast. I'm Jonathan Howell, an energy advisor at Coventry City Council, and for this session we are discussing net zero. Now it's a term that's becoming more and more prevalent. We've all heard of the government's commitment to reaching net zero by 2050, and also we've all heard the warnings from the scientific community of the risks we face if we do not reduce our overall carbon emissions. Now as an energy advisor, I'm often out and about in the field, talking to businesses about ways to reduce their energy consumption, and the conversation can and does often lead to net zero. Businesses have had Brexit to deal with, COVID, and now it's another possible challenge that they need to face. And many businesses that I speak to are unsure how to start their journey and simply don't know what, if any, the benefits of net zero will be. Now, those of you that follow us regularly and attend our events and our webinars will know that guidance forms a key part of our programme. We always try and provide tangible advice and signpost businesses to the correct support. So this podcast therefore aims to demystify net zero, give it some context for our business community and provide some guidance on those very important first steps. So to assist with this, I'd like to introduce today's podcast guest, Adam Bastock from Small 99. Adam, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Thanks for joining. Just to sort of set the scene and set a bit of context, first of all, Adam, can you give us a bit of background to your business, to yourself, for example, when you were founded, what your objectives are, and also what pivotal events in your career led to the foundation of your business?
Brilliant. Now, I'll start with the career bit, because I think that sets the scene nicely. In the past 10 years or so, I've really been working with small business owners, giving them practical advice on digital marketing. So going, you want to rank the top of Google, how do you do that? What do you need to do that's really simple and low cost to do it? A lot of that advice is fairly kind of straightforward. And there's a lot, like net zero, there's a lot of noise out there and it's cutting through that to go, as a small business, you don't have the budget for an entire marketing department, therefore just do this. Saw the opportunity and have always had this background in sustainability alongside that. And 2-3 years ago, really saw the opportunity to go, I'm seeing much bigger trends within net zero around, or sustainability more broadly, around there's a lot of noise out there that is aimed at academics or big business and corporates. And there's that small business area that was just completely being ignored. So Small 99 was founded to really kind of tackle that and go, well, you know, I think you've got some stats on the kind of the small business makeup in the UK, but there's, you know, 5.5 million small micro businesses. How do we get all of those people to take one step forward? Because I know, having sold to small businesses for the past 10 years, that they can move incredibly quickly if they need to, and that a decision can be made within, you know, hours and days rather than months or years. It's how do we harness that agility to really tackle climate change? And I think that's the big, you know, from a business opportunity and from a climate point of view, I think there's a huge kind of power there. So we started probably about two years ago now, I think. And, you know, our mission is to get 1 million small businesses on their first steps to net zero by 2025. So really trying to build this networked kind of impact organization that just gets people started really quickly because of that ability to move fast.
Yeah, excellent. So you can be the first port of call, basically, for somebody that's unsure and looking for some initial guidance, basically.
Exactly that. So I'm not necessarily going to accredit the whole net zero journey. It's more about, let's just get you started to get those people making those first few steps that are easy and normally quite kind of quick to do.
Excellent. I think, and also just to set the scene for the rest of the podcast, really, I've done some research on Google last night. And as many people will probably know, the SME and small business sector is huge in the UK. As Adam has said, there's nearly 5.5 million small businesses. That's between 0 and 49 employees in the UK. And that actually equates to 99.2% of the total UK business population. So the scope and the scale here is huge for us to help businesses and also influence the whole wider net zero agenda nationally and internationally. So it's really important to get right, basically.
I think there's a really interesting thing here as well, is we've effectively got 5.5 million businesses saying that they're too small to make a difference. And it's this question of going, well, actually, yes, while your individual footprint may be quite small collectively, and through that kind of network and supply chain, there's much bigger opportunity there to make rapid decarbonisation.
Yeah, good stuff. Look, lovely intro. Thank you very much. So let's delve now into the bones of the podcast. I'll start with an easy win for you. I think it's an easy win. So let's give some context to net zero. What is net zero and why is it so important at present? Why do we hear so much about net zero?
Yeah, so I think just quickly before we dive into the importance, I think it's important to set the scene with carbon neutral and net zero, because I think carbon neutral is a term that gets used quite a lot, and it's quite important to know why it's so different. So with carbon neutral, as an example, it would be that you measure your carbon footprint of your emissions and your environmental impact, and then you offset that with an equivalent amount of offsets. So that might be 100 tons of CO2 as your footprint, and then you're offsetting 100 tons. The difference with net zero is that you need to demonstrate reduction. So rather than just saying that you've got 100 tons of carbon emissions in your business, you need to get that emissions down to around 10 tons in order to be net zero. There's the more detail on why that's difficult and the pathways and the times for that, which I won't go into now, but this is the key difference between carbon neutrality and net zero, and why net zero has come around quite a lot more and why it's becoming a requirement, is because it requires you to actually take action within your business, and it's not just a case of buying the offsets somewhere else. And again, there's lots of technicalities around the differences there, which I won't go into, but that's the broad important reason why net zero is being discussed now rather than neutrality. As in terms of why it's important, I think the climate risk to businesses here is massive. We're seeing kind of a lack of action on this, and we need to be doing a lot more rapid decarbonisation in order to stay within that 1.5 degree or 2 degree threshold. 1.5 degree being that it is a threshold, not a target. Beyond that, we do start entering into destabilising territory of the world. And that kind of presents a lot of business risks. And I think this is where we're seeing a lot of inflation at the minute due to the kind of crisis that's going on. We're going to see similar patterns of that with climate change, where things get more expensive because the ability to kind of grow things becomes less stable. And we know that stability is normally a good thing for business. That's the kind of broad picture. On a smaller picture, which feels less kind of doomer and a bit more positive, we're starting to see a real positive opportunity for businesses to have net zero as a competitive advantage. So an example of that would be someone like the NHS. They're starting to really require, I think it's NHS and Tesco are the two big ones in the UK, who are really looking for all of their supply chain to have net zero strategies in place in the next 12 to 18 months. And therefore, if you are working with these organisations, or you are trying to work with them, having this net zero plan laid out is going to be a way for you to be ahead of the competition and start winning more work as a result of this. So rather than sustainability being this nice to have, I think we are starting to see it as a requirement for business operation and a way to really beat out your competition as a small business.
So the benefits then as a business would be more stability, improving your supply chain, improving your procurement. I mean, as an energy advisor, when I'm talking to businesses about reducing their carbon, there is now a tangible reduction in energy costs, ongoing costs, because of that carbon. So it's an easy explanation for me to explain to businesses. If you did A, B, and C, you reduce your energy bills. At the moment, energy prices are really, really high. So that's the cost saving is the driver in the main. But then you're also saying then that there are other benefits wrapped around that as well, in terms of stability, procurement, as I've just said. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly that. I think a good example of that very quickly is as a business that used to look at one of the people that we worked with down in West Sussex, who they installed solar panels, battery charging point, and got an electric vehicle about 5 years ago. They staggered out over several years. And, you know, they've weathered the previous storm of kind of energy crises much better because their costs have been lowered. They're not affected as much by those rising prices because they're off grid for 6 months of the year as a business, and that's through the kind of investment up front of that. And I think people who move quickly on this and who are adopting these technologies now will set themselves up for a much more resilient future.
I mean, I also, when I'm talking about solar, for example, with my clients that I work with, I talk about the soft benefits as well, which is sometimes the green narrative. They can promote themselves as a more green and a more sort of sustainable business, and that then in turn then helps them win more business, basically, on the back of that. In fact, I did have one business who came to me looking for support, grant support for those listening, on solar panels, where they cared about the cost savings, but they were more concerned about getting the solar panels on the roof, taking pictures of the solar panels, putting it on their website, and showing that they were a sort of like an off-grid net zero business. So it's interesting to sort of see that all of these things wrap around those benefits quite nicely.
Exactly. I think having that kind of tangible story to tell is really important because I think that's where we're moving with a lot of the kind of the action on net zero, is that the more you can point to something and say we've done this, the better your story is.
And I suppose as a business, if you're in a competitive sector, if you don't do this, then you are at risk of getting left behind, aren't you, by your competitors. So excellent. OK, good advice and good answers. So if I was a business and I've not got much of a clue how to get started. A, where would I start? And B, from your experience, is it the same journey for any sector or any business, or does it differ depending on what sort of sector that business operates in? We deal a lot of manufacturing and industry in Coventry. Mm. Would it be different, say, for an office-based logistics firm maybe somewhere else in your experience?
I think that's a really good question. I would say that roughly, I think it's less different than you might expect in that 80% of your carbon footprint as a business is going to be fairly similar to a lot of other businesses. So if you take that, you know, if you've got a manufacturing client in Coventry and you've got a hospitality, you know, like let's say a hotel in Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Both of those units are still going to have things like transport emissions. They're still going to have a lot of, I think, electricity and energy is a really obvious one, where installing LEDs in either of those is going to help reduce their cost down. It's going to help reduce their footprint down. Staff travel and commuting, having electric vehicle charging points, having electric bike storage on site, again, is going to make a huge impact on the costs of, like, kind of the living costs for the employees, but also for the operational elements of the business as well, and the kind of the carbon emissions. So I think there are going to be certain threads of going, actually, you do need specialist support here because you're manufacturing something incredibly unique and different that is requiring, you know, I don't know what it might be, copper from a certain part of the world that then has certain risks to it. And you do need specialist support for that. But to get to that point, there's probably quite a lot you can do that is the same as it is for a campsite, for a cafe, for a, you know, a consultant working from home. They're all going to be very similar elements of advice.
So you'd pick off the low-hanging fruit, as we call it, first of all, and then drill into the more sort of detailed analysis moving forward. And is that's obviously where someone like yourself would help the business with that sort of more involved process, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, we are that initial 80% where we've got the kind of pathways built that is rapid action so that you can work through that quickly. And then we will hand off to other people who have got more expertise. So a good example of this might be if you are a cafe, where we can give you the advice for the first 80 things out of 100 on your to-do list that you need to do. But one of those might be measure your carbon footprinting your menu, and then having a label for that to say, well, actually, if you're ordering a beef burger versus a veggie burger, what's the impact of that? That's not something I'm going to get involved with at the detail. I can advise on that more broadly. Yeah. But then there are specialists out there who are filling in those real niche gaps. Okay. We're just trying to connect them all up to people to take that action much quicker.
Okay, very interesting. And also something that does interest me when I'm meeting with businesses, what's your opinion on the role that employees can play within the journey? Yeah. Because I see some businesses where it's a top-down approach where they're sort of waiting to be told what to do. But other businesses we work with, it's the employees that are driving the whole, because employees care more about the environment in perhaps in certain areas and certain sectors. What's your opinion on the role that employees can play, really, in terms of behavioural approaches, I suppose, and influencing that sort of overall policy?
I think it really has to be both, in that, you know, employees are going to drive change and that they can do a lot, but there's going to be certain things where there might be infrastructure that they can't influence. So an example might be, let's say you do have an industrial unit that's probably based out of town. It's not going to have much public transport to it and might not be that suitable for alternatives or like walking to or something like that. It might be that your employees would like to get electric vehicles and they would like to kind of decarbonize their own lives that way. However, one of the big barriers to that might be charging infrastructure, but they might be able to through the business, and it would suit their needs fine, in that if they can park at work and charge for 6 hours a day, you're not going to have any range anxiety there. So the question there is, how does the employee then influence and communicate that to the business owner to have that change implemented? And two, has the employer kind of created an environment where that can be discussed and brought up? And I think this is where it has to be both, in that there are business benefits to doing that for the business owner in terms of, you know, perks and benefits and solar panels. You know far more about this than I do in terms of the details, but But you know, you need to create those kind of environments. So I think,
you know, I suppose also as an employer, if you're creating that environment, it's making it a more attractive place to work as well. It's helping attract key staff into your business, isn't it, moving forward?
Exactly. And I think there's a massive part of this around kind of talent attraction and retention, that businesses that have got demonstrated kind of honest green policies and strategies are far more are retaining those staff much better. So I think employees definitely need to play a role, and I think the key thing, reason why, is that every business decision is a sustainability one. So, you know, if someone's ordering envelopes into the office, where are they getting them from? Where are they being sourced from? How many are they ordering? Why are they ordering envelopes in the first place? Can you actually go paperless? All of those small questions that needs to be enabled by the business owner to challenge those questions so that then they can make better decisions. So that does sound quite complicated and quite difficult, but it really is that, you know, this isn't a decision to be made by a green employee. It's not like you can hire someone to come in and just be the green representative. It needs to be someone who fundamentally changes the kind of everyday operational activity of the organization.
Would it be akin to putting in place a health and safety policy? You're looking to put in place a green policy for your business that everyone sort of signs up to, I suppose, if that's the way you could look at it.
I think you need that, but then you need to make sure that the behavior change does follow up with that. Yeah. And I think that is where you start getting into measurement and KPIs and tracking and all this stuff to go, well, actually, if you're discussing every month how much like money the business has made or not made, well, actually, how much waste has that company produced or not produced? And how much business travel has the company produced or not produced? And, you know, how are you starting to influence that?
I think also just to put this into context for any companies that are out there listening that are looking at their energy use, which, of course, is my area of speciality. When I'm doing energy reports and I'm looking at behavioural change, we allow a 10% overall reduction of energy use based on behaviour change, such as telling staff to turn off PCs, turn off lights, close doors, so on and so forth. And that's an official Carbon Trust figure. So anybody that's looking to get into behavioural change, it's worth doing, not just for your staff engagement, but also for a possible 10% per annum reduction in your energy costs, which can add up to something quite considerable. So that's definitely something we would both recommend moving forward. So just moving on to my next point then, this is more about how people would gather that information. What tools are available out there to help businesses plan for net zero? Are there any sort of softwares out there that we can use or any sort of platforms to measure that footprint? Because I presume a baseline here is key to then measure your improvements moving forward.
I think it is. I think it's a very big question, this one, which I enjoy. So if we just narrow this down to measuring your footprint to start off with, there are different methods of doing that. So there's kind of the generic advice, as I would call it. So for example, Small 99, we have got a digital footprint calculator where you put in some figures and it will estimate your footprint for free in about, you know, a minute, if that, where it is a rough finger in the air of, right, what's your website traffic doing? What's your working from home emissions look like? What do all these different areas of your business that you might not consider look like? That is not going to be high quality enough to be like a verified net zero Carbon Trust at level of assessment. The question I have there is, does it need to be to start enacting behavior change in a positive direction? Not really. I don't think we need to have a full footprint measured to start making changes. I think solar panels are a good example. We all know that solar panels are going to reduce your energy footprint and your emissions. You don't necessarily need to fully measure that in order to know that's true, and therefore we can just get on and do it anyway. So that's the kind of one approach that I'd say Small 99 sits at, is kind of that end of the quick, fast, generic advice that is accurate-ish, but not scientifically verified necessarily. You then start moving towards different methods, and this is where the software tools come in a lot more, I think, is account space measurement. So as a business, you might be spending £100,000 a year on train travel or flights or whatever it is. Quite quickly, you can take that figure and convert it into an estimated footprint that is going to be more accurate than, you know, me kind of giving generic advice, but it's still not going to be the same as measuring how many litres of fuel you've used, which is what a normal footprint would do. And that if you are a manufacturing client, you might need to go to that level of detail to meet certain requirements or standards. And so you've got that spend-based measurement. So kind of quite a few different companies out there based on industry, based on type, that are worth looking at. And then moving on from that, you've then got the more accurate carbon footprint measurement, which is far more detail orientated, which is going to be more intensive and is going to be slightly more kind of hands-on and slow, because it is going to be more accurate. So I think what I'm trying to say here is, just looking at that footprint, there isn't necessarily a right or wrong answer. It is a scale of kind of progress. And that my advice is always, start really small. To measure your entire footprint for transport is really difficult. To measure the footprint of a journey that you regularly make in a car or a train, that's a 5-minute job. That will give you the information and advice to then start informing decisions and start changing behavior much more quickly than saying, oh God, we've got to sit down and pull out our accounts data and get our accountant into a meeting and sit down with a consultant and then work out the average fuel prices from 2020 to 2021 and then the average fuel prices on these times and do all that stuff. So I think it's understanding where you are and what your needs are. Are you doing this because you want to tell a story or because you need to meet a certification and a verification? That's going to narrow down what you actually need from a tool.
Yeah. So basically, don't be put off by it. Start simple and then sort of grow it as and when you need to, depending on which way that the business needs to go, basically.
Well, there's a really interesting thing that we've seen is that businesses get far more interested in measurement once they start taking action. Is once they start making changes, they then go, oh, what was the difference of that? Or, well, we've just changed our paper from like virgin grade to recycled. What's the footprint impact of that? And then you can start filling in the gaps quite easily with that. That helps you get started.
No, good advice. I'm just wondering whether now is, I'm trying to demystify buzzwords for our audience. I'm wondering whether now is a good point to explain, or you to explain a bit more about what scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions are, because I see that a lot and I know about it better than most, but perhaps you could elaborate on that a bit for us. So anybody that's unsure what that means, just break down what those keywords mean, if that's okay.
Scope 1 is your business vehicles and any gas that you're burning on site. So any heating boilers, anything like that, or if you're a coffee roastery, gas that's heating on that. Scope 2, electricity, fairly straightforward. Scope 3 is then everything else. So we tend to phrase that as, what do you buy, sell, and throw away? That is everything that's going to be on a scope 3. And that's going to include things like employee commuting, business travel, hotel stays, etc. Scope 3 is likely 90% or more of your footprint because it is the daily operations of your business. And it is the weakest one at the minute that's legislatively targeted because it is so complicated to really calculate. So I'm not sure how clear that is necessarily, but this is where we try and avoid this language a little bit, because scope 1, 2, and 3 is quite difficult to get your head around. And in my mind, again, it doesn't necessarily matter for you to get started. It does matter for requirements and reporting, and it is really good to be aware of. However, to actually get you started, we tend to talk of the 5 buckets, which is water usage, waste, energy and buildings, transport, and then supply chain. So that's much easier lens to view your business to go, right, how much stuff are we throwing away? What are we spending on our materials? How much stuff are we buying in? Transport, well, we've got business travel. We've got how our staff are getting into work. It's how our customers are finding us. It's how many deliveries we're doing in our vans and all that stuff. So it becomes a lot more tangible to explore your business and trying to fit it into things.
The 5 buckets is actually a nice way of explaining that, actually. That makes a bit more sense to probably more of our community than the scope explanation. So that's a good description in my opinion. So with that in mind, and obviously when I'm talking to businesses and you're the same, do you come across any companies that have a lack of knowledge because they don't have, say, a sustainability professional on site? A lot of companies I see are probably below 50 employees. They haven't got a sustainability manager because they simply can't afford one. And then it probably is like a bit of a hot potato. It gets kicked around the workforce for like a specialist to sort of, or not a specialist rather, an unspecialist person to sort of get involved. Would that be a hindrance at all, not having that sort of designated sustainability role in a company? Or does it not really matter if they get the right advice?
I don't think it really matters. And I think there's probably quite a lot of parallels to other advice, is that, you know, small businesses that may have less than 10 employees are probably working with an accountant or a marketing expert. They are unlikely to have a dedicated financial director in the business at that kind of stage. And that's the same with sustainability, is that you'll probably use these people or tools or whatever to dip in and out of. You're not necessarily going to have a full-time employee, and that certainly shouldn't stop you. And I think it's the same as what I was saying earlier, really, is that every decision you're making in the business is a sustainability one. And in the same way that every business decision is one that's going to impact your operations or your human resource or your kind of sales and marketing. So you need to start treating it the same and go, well, actually, how does that impact these things? If you're going to an event that's a marketing thing, well, you know, what's the return on investment from you going and doing that marketing spend? But also then, what is the return on investment of the carbon spend for that? Yeah. How much carbon are you spending to go to that event and the environmental impact of that versus the return that, you know, you're using? Is it worth you going? Is it worth selling the entire team, etc.? So I'd be very hesitant to say that you need to speak to necessarily an expert about this. I think there's a lot of resource out there, and, you know, we've certainly provided quite a lot of kind of free blog posts and things on very specific and weird and wonderful topics. So you could start very small with this and start educating in small ways and then build out from there. And I think
I'm answering my own question here, I suppose, but by as we spoke about earlier on, an SME by its sheer nature would be more agile. Therefore, yeah, they're more able to pick up on these sort of things themselves and roll with them pretty quickly, wouldn't they?
Precisely. And it will be typically see that the business owner will then go on a course of some sort, and that might be an hour webinar, you know, just to kind of upskill and get the basics. It might be they go on a more detailed thing in the same way they will be doing for marketing or accounting or fundraising or whatever it is. So I think this is the challenge here is that then the time commitment it takes to that, and how do we go, rather than trying to measure your entire footprint at once, which is going to take you a bit of time, like it's, you know, hours at best. How do we get that down to less than 10 minutes to get you started and go, well, actually, let's ignore everything else. You say that you're spending the most money on train travel. Okay, well, let's look at that and really kind of assess why are you traveling so much for that, and, you know, what are the alternatives there to decarbonize it. Bad example, picking train travel because it's the lowest carbon one, but let's say flights. Let's say you're spending loads of money on flights and go, well, actually, what happens if we start looking at trains as an alternative to that?
Yeah, and I suppose also, assuming that the MD were to drive that initial sort of investigative work, once the MD can see that there's a lot of tangible cost savings at the back of it, it would then gather pace, wouldn't it, and roll through the whole business. So
exactly. Okay. Yeah.
I think I've answered my own question there with your answers. So that's a good way of explaining it. So overall then, just going back to cost savings, as I've just mentioned, in your professional experience, what are the largest cost savings that you've seen, or the largest benefits you've seen for a business? I work on cost and carbon savings in my reporting and auditing. So what's the most you've seen yourself that you've sort of assisted a business with to give our audience some idea of the potential savings that are out there at the moment?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I don't have the kind of figures to hand, annoyingly, for the client in West Sussex. I think they were the biggest, where, you know, the savings there were tens of thousands of pounds. And yeah, they were a great example of that sustainability is often an investment rather than a cost, because yes, when they initially installed those solar panels and battery pack and heat pump, I don't take this figure with a pinch of salt, but, you know, 30-35 grand probably total investment for that. But then over the next 7 years, that's paid itself back and saved them probably 60,000 to 70,000 pounds on, you know, on kind of their energy spend. So, and I think this is what we need to be leading with, really, is the cost savings and going, well, actually, this is sustainability is fundamentally an efficiency drive. It's language that we already know and how to use and can do that. I think energy is the one where it's the biggest chunk and very obvious. This is the challenge of why I don't have the figures necessarily, is because a lot of the advice we give is in the small fringes of operational, like daily operations. So packaging is a really good one, where it might be that a company is spending, you know, 10,000-20,000 pounds as an e-commerce business who are sending out these parcels. And actually what you'll do is, rather than saying, well, swap your packaging to XYZ, it's that you're probably already using paper packaging just because of trends over the past 5 years. But you've probably not looked at how much you're using and going, well, why are you sending out these parcels? Why are you sending out a small mug in a massive box or whatever it is, where you're then wasting loads of packaging? How can you make your packaging more appropriate and smaller down and shrink it down and probably invest in new boxes that are more custom and smaller? That's then going to, over the long term, reduce your footprint down. It's going to reduce the amount of packaging you're spending down, but getting to that figure as a single tick box is the challenge. So I think
what you're kind of saying is that there are lots of things that are measurable, but some that are perhaps not so easy to track and measure in that context.
And it is the biggest challenge that I face in selling this to businesses, is going, well, actually, I need a financial director or an accountant in my corner to look at this and make this really easy to understand, because it's operational spend and therefore it gets quite complicated on the maths. This is where solar panels, I think, are a brilliant example, where the cost return on investment of those is now, what, 3 to 4 years, I think, on some.
I've done some that were, believe it or not, 18 months. The energy rates are so high at the moment. I've done a couple that are 18 months to 2 year payback. So literally a no brainer, basically. So,
and I think that's the thing. And that's before you start tying that in with then, well, actually, you know, if you're a light industrial unit that is operating only 9 till 5, well, solar panels during the summer are probably producing, you know, some energy beyond that, either end of the day as well as weekends. And then you can start selling back to the grid, or then it starts paying back battery storage costs and all that stuff. So I think, energy is a really interesting one because it is so easy to calculate. It's basic spreadsheet.
So just segueing slightly then away from the sort of bones of it, the cost savings and so on, I'm going to start to sort of bring the context a bit more future looking, if that's okay. So in terms of policy and incentives and things that can help drive the whole net zero and carbon neutrality agenda, what changes would you think would be worth seeing? What would you like to see to sort of help drive that forward, be it government policy, be it accreditation maybe? Is there anything that could help sort of support this other than businesses going on their own, which is what's happening at the moment, to try and join that journey? What will help that overall piece moving forward, do you think?
Yeah, well, so I think in terms of what's happening now and what we're seeing, before I get on to what I'd like to see, I think it's mostly being driven by the private sector. So we're seeing a lot of engagement from banks and supply chains and people going, look, we need to take action on this because they're being hit by legislation. And that's cascading down into small businesses in a matter of months when they thought it would be years. So as I said at the top of this, you know, the NHS, Tesco's, currently that's for contracts over £5 million. That's now going to be for all contracts within the next 12 months. And we're starting to see that as well, not at a national level, but through local enterprise partnerships or business innovation districts, things like that, where any grants that are coming out of councils or organisations that are local or regional, they are tending to start to include these requirements for net zero as well. It's fragmented and it is not national and it's not clear. So take that again with a pinch of salt, because if you're based in Nottingham or Derby or Coventry, there are going to be different requirements from the council or from the local university on that.
Yeah,
but that's coming through. So I think nationally, at a legislative level, we're not seeing a huge amount of support from the government, and there could be a lot more done there. However, I do think that is being filled in by the private sector and by more ambitious local organisations based on the city. So we see a lot of just differences in city regions. Accreditations as well, just very quickly on that, is again massively lacking. I think there's some requirements coming through, so like the standardized energy and carbon reporting mechanism, I think it's called, which is a carbon trust one, only affects businesses with £36 million or more in turnover. You've got TCFD, which again is, I think, you know, is financial institutions with £250 million or more in turnover. Those aren't hitting small businesses, but that is hitting small businesses in the fact that those businesses are now going, oh God, we've got to quite quickly work out what our supply chain's doing and calculate that, and that pressure's coming down. So that's sort of, I think that's positive, and I think it's something to be aware of. And if you can get yourself in a position with even a fairly basic net zero policy, you'll be ahead of the competition. In terms of what I'd like to see and what is coming down the line in the future, I've got a tab open right now, which I'm looking at, which is about yesterday or this morning, the EU. So again, not necessarily relevant to us yet, but there's a first carbon import tax that's been approved. So that's likely to see things like steel that's being imported from China will then start being taxed based on its carbon emissions. So we will start to see these gaps filling in the fact that, yes, okay, the UK might only have 5% of global carbon emissions that we're generating domestically, but if you start taking into account our imported emissions, that figure jumps up a lot quicker because we're importing so much from abroad, and as a small business you will be as well, and that's something to be aware of. So in the future I would anticipate these things starting to come through, and that if you are buying as a small business steel from China, that might start to get more expensive than say steel from Sweden that is being produced through green hydrogen, because it's lower carbon and therefore has a lower tax on it. I'd say that's still quite a few years away. That is something I would like to see implemented a lot quicker, because I do think that if you started putting a carbon tax on something like domestic transport, so rail versus kind of airplanes, what you would ideally see is a situation where you start making flights more expensive and you start using that to subsidize and reduce costs in rail. And that mechanism has worked and does work in California, where they've got quite a lot of that going on.
Yeah,
that's the one part which is kind of carrot stick territory. I think the other one, which is a much bigger carrot, is I'd like to see a lot more microfinancing from governments for small businesses, because I do think, and again, going back to solar panels, everyone I speak to is happy with them. I've never heard anyone say they don't really want solar panels on their business premises. So I think the conversation is, you know, 5 years ago on that, we're so far ahead of it. People just want to get it done. They just want the money to make it cheap to do now. And so if the government could do... And solar panels, I mean, again, you'll know the details more than I do, but from my understanding, for a small business unit, will be anything from £5,000 to £20,000, depending on the size of installation.
Yeah,
it's not huge sums of money, really. That's a fairly comfortable amount of money for a small business to spend. Just doing it in one lump sum is a bit off-putting. And therefore, where is the low financial green finance from banks, from institutions, from government to make this much lower risk? Because the challenge I see is a lot of the funds for green funding, it tends to be 50 grand upwards. And it's like, small businesses don't need that much cash. Again, though, having said that, regionally, it does vary. I think it is Nottingham does have lower cost grants that are available for this. And it is something I'd like to see local kind of regions roll out a bit more. But then that comes into all much more difficulty with based on university funding and EU RDF funding and all that stuff. So
you're right. I mean, our, as you know, our green business funding is designed for use towards things like solar and LED. It was very, very popular, and it became more as soon as that energy price rise kicked in, it became more and more and more popular. So I'm hoping that more funding does become available for just that kind of thing, basically.
And this is the challenge, right? As we did a talk on funding recently, where there's loads of good schemes like this that were available, but they'd run out, and it's just a few ones that have got slightly bigger funding or slightly lower uptake that handled that. So I think that's where I'd like to see it go. But I think broadly, most businesses want to do something. And I think that's the really positive thing. I don't think we're in a position that we need more education. I don't even think we're in a position where we necessarily need much more information. I think that will come with action. I think it's just, you know, if you went around to every business in Coventry and said, we'll install solar panels, it'll cost this much, we'll give you a grant for it, and it's a 0% loan payback over 5 years.
Yeah.
The uptake, I imagine, would be significant based on, you know, the data you've got. So
it's easy from a personal point of view, it's easy to get put off by the scale of what's needed here. But putting my positive hat on, there are a lot of good things going on. I think what you've just explained very, very well, things are gathering pace very, very quickly. So as soon as the banks and the government starts to align and roll more things out, it'll only grow the whole project further, won't it?
And I think the technology is always coming down in price. And as you say, already we're in a position where solar panels will pay themselves back in 3 years' time. So it's now becoming into a business decision territory rather than, oh, it's 10, 15 years. The business might not be trading then for positive reasons, might be the seller exits. And it gets complicated. So there's a lot happening, and it will happen quicker than people expect, I think. So getting ahead of the game is a great opportunity here, and I think that's the key thing.
Agreed. So say I'm a business that has gone on a nice journey. I have measured my carbon. I put in place some reduction policies. I'm starting to see benefits. Some businesses that I work with, they want the certification. They want their accreditation to show that they've come to their clients, but also their sector they work in, that they've done this journey and they are approved, as it were. Yeah. Are there any accreditations out there that are standardized at the moment? I'm thinking like the EPC, which a lot of us love and hate, if you know what I mean. Anything out there at the moment that would help sort of certify that, or are there any plans for that to be brought in? Or do you think it's a bad idea, maybe?
Short answer is no, there's not anything out there, unfortunately. Yeah. So it's not appropriate for small businesses anyway. So there are a lot of private schemes out there, and you could pay for a green badge from various different providers, but they're ultimately not standardized, and you know, there's benefits and weaknesses for going with them. The kind of the biggest name in that space is probably B Corp, which again is a very good scheme, very well known, very well regarded. However, I would not recommend it to most small businesses because of the time intensity for it to be processed. It makes sense in certain industries other than others. Similarly, there will be things like ISO 14001, is it? I think it is.
Yeah, and that's right.
There's another one coming out, which I think is a bit more net zero aligned, but again, isn't going to be right for everybody, because I think, you know, does your local cafe need that standard? Probably not. It might be a bit intense and therefore not necessarily appropriate. So I think this is where...
So should there be a national scheme with different levels depending on the business size and sector, maybe to help people achieve something?
There needs to be something like that, and I think there needs to be something that's quite simple and clear. So I'm thinking here, so as an example, a lot of the net zero definition I gave before, where it was a 90% reduction, that comes from something called the Science-Based Targets Initiative. That the Science-Based Targets Initiative is based on the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. So these are international schemes which are very big, and they're very rigorous and very standardized. And they are kind of fantastic for what they do, but the SBTI is only really for really big corporates. You know, to get your scope 1 and 2 approved by them is about £1,000. To get scope 3 is by another £1,000. And it's not, and even then, a lot of the data is going to be so rigorous that businesses that are small won't be able to provide it. So it's like, okay, how do we get something like that that is appropriate for small businesses? And ideally, it would be a government-backed, approved, very simple, light touch thing that goes, have you started measuring these things, right? You know, it's just in my head, it's like a little grid chart. It's a table with then green columns filled out for gold, silver and bronze or whatever, and do it that way. I don't know if anything's coming with that. I know there's still a lot of kind of wrangling around the definition of net zero being set in stone within different organizations, or kind of, you know, at EU level, at a UK level, and making sure that's all standardized and aligned internationally, which is where my fallback position for this is, because this all sounds quite frustrating, which it is, but just be honest and transparent. Like, the amount of businesses that I speak to who have said, well, we deliver all of our coffee on cargo bikes, we, you know, we only source locally, we've got electric vehicle charge points, we're trying to get solar panels, but there's issues with planning permission, we've changed all of our packaging to be plastic free, we do a return scheme, all of this stuff. And I'm like, where can I read that on your website? And they will say,
that's
a good point, we don't have anything. Start with that. Just make a list of what you've done, make a list of what you'd like to do, and make a list of what you're working on actively now, whether you're in conversation with yourselves over solar panels, or whether you're dreaming of buying an electric bike or whatever it might be, or a, you know, Tesla. Write it all down on a piece of paper, write it up on your website as a list, and then just post it. Like,
do a LinkedIn post or a blog or something, I suppose, is probably the way to do it, isn't it?
Just do anything, because at the minute most people are doing nothing. So really, go away from this podcast and sit down for 5 minutes, not more than that really, and just on the back of an envelope just write out what you've done, what you're doing, or what you want to do later. With this view, we are trying to build out like our own tool that will be a sustainability policy builder, because this is the challenge we're finding so much, is that we're not in a position of businesses having not taken action. Most businesses have done quite a lot. They could do a lot more, but, and that's a different question, but it's the accreditation one, I think, can be a bit of a distraction at times, because it raises a lot more questions than it tends to answer. And it, you know, it depending on your industry is going to depend on what's right for you. So
yeah, and I suppose the danger is as well is people would then get bogged down with the admin behind the accreditation, and it's just EPC. I'm using it as an example. It can be quite time consuming to get done and costly, can't it? So
well, this is the problem, is I see a lot of consultancies who are really in favour of accreditations, because obviously they can sell their time and money on the back of them. So it's a big thing of, well, actually, we don't necessarily need that. We, you know, not in a race against measurement, we're in a race against kind of action and reduction. So
for now, anyone out there listening, if you've done something good, flag it, promote it, and sort of put it on your website and put it on your blogs, and people will gain traction via those methods. Shout from the rooftops, if you were, basically.
But I think have it in a single place, so that if you are going for a council grant or similar, and they ask you what your net zero strategy is, just link to that and go like, look, here's a record of everything we've done. It doesn't need to be formal, it just needs to be something.
Just leading into my final question then, which kind of ties in with that as well, and I'll give you a bit of context around this. This is the final question, is about procurement. So I'm very often with businesses, and I'll do a nice energy report for them that says, right, there's three things I've identified. Your insulation's poor, your lighting's poor, you need solar. I give them all the figures for those cost savings and an estimated capital cost. And 9 times out of 10, the first question I get back from the business is, where do I go to get people to do what you're recommending? So there's good suppliers and bad suppliers. We have our own green business directory on our website where we're not able to promote individual businesses and contractors, but we do have a directory that sort of points people towards known companies that work in the sustainability sector. What advice and what experience have you had about how to choose the right supplier to make sure that implication in your project will go as planned in terms of the carbon and the cost savings, if any advice?
Yeah, I think two pieces there would be, one, look to see if they've got a page on the website saying everything they've done for their sustainability journey, because from a scope 3 perspective, in terms of your supply chain buy and sell, if they have, that will naturally decarbonize your footprint as you work with them over the future. Two, I think local is key. And I think this is what we found really interestingly is, you know, we were in these events, a series of events across the country. We've had a few thousand people attend them. What they are attending for is to meet local people and to hear what is going on in their region. They are not attending to hear about the nationwide stuff. And we started leading with that and realized quite quickly no one really cared. So I think going local with them, and if you are walking past a business that has got solar panels on the roof, go and knock on their door and say, who installed it? Did you have a good time? Would you recommend them? Honestly, I think that is the best way. It doesn't scale, it's not tech, it's not sexy, but it does just work. And I think there is a human connection here that we need to be leaning into. And things like local directories, which are postcode based almost, so like, you know, or city based, rather than even, you know, an area. So rather than being the Midlands or Warwickshire, it is right Coventry, Warwick, Leamington, Rugby. These are the places that are then recommended installers for that region or for that area. Which is frustrating, I know, because it's not as easy as like a database that's got everything in it. But I think it's the only way that you can really approach
it. So I think, I totally agree. I think shop local, shop by recommendation, get three quotations is something I always recommend, and hope that the supplier you're looking to use has gone or is going through the same sustainability journey and net zero journey that your company is going for. And you can obviously align, and that relationship then will be stronger and it will grow, won't it, moving forward. So
what I think the benefit is they're probably having the exact same questions and challenges that you are, is that even if they're installing solar panels, they're probably going, we don't really know what our carbon footprint is. And it's like, oh great, share the information. Go, well, we're finding this with our transport, share that spreadsheet, and then you know you can help collaborate and move on. That's the position we need to be in. There's not really any competition in this space, and the more people are doing, the more we're going to win in that reduction journey, which is what we need, because we're running out of time to a certain extent.
Good answer. Look, it's been so good to talk to you today. It's been really interesting. You've given us some really good answers, and I hope that our audience out there will take some pointers from this. And so thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to learn more about Adam's services, follow the information on our podcast description. And I'd like to wrap up today. If you'd like more information about the Green Business Programme, then please join us at our next event on the 10th of May. That's an early start at 8 a.m. This will be an in-person event at the Transport Museum in Coventry, and we'll focus on networking and sharing ideas primarily. We've got a number of speakers presenting on a wide range of topics, so if this is of interest, then check our media channels for more information. Thank you for listening to the Coventry and Warwickshire Green Business Programme podcast. The Green Business Programme is part funded by the European Regional Development Fund and is delivered by Coventry City Council, Coventry University and Coventry University Enterprises. This podcast was produced by Maria Covlia and hosted by Jonathan Howell. Thanks for listening.